now delivers and offers curbside pickup. For info on placing your lunch or dinner order, visit vaqueroscafe.com. It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports, with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
When I was in my much younger days, when I was little and into my teenage, early teen years, one of my sports casting, I don't know if idols is the right word, but I used to listen to him a lot, was a guy by the name of Wynn Elliott. And he used to do the CBS Sports Roundup, the Sports World Roundup on the CBS radio network every morning from 6:53 a.m. to 6:59 a.m. I used to listen to it every morning while having breakfast or getting ready for school. Never missed it. In fact, I was actually born at 6:57 in the morning, so that year I was probably born while Wynn Elliott was doing Sports World Roundup. Anyway, Wynn Elliott, when the Pittsburgh Steelers won their first Super Bowl, I always remember, the next morning, he starts off the sportscast with, "Shh, it's midnight in Pittsburgh, and I have a terrible headache," as a joke. That's how I feel this morning. It's a long way going around the garage to get to the barn, as my dad used to say. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower, here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM, 1260, and streaming, yes. On the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you with us. Jeff Howe will be joining us momentarily. Our man behind the glass, Snoop Daniel, is there, our producer as well. Good morning to you, Jonathan. How are you?
Good morning, Craig. Yeah. I was rooting for you last night.
Were you?
I was.
Were you rooting for me, or were you just rooting for the Dodgers in general? Or
you know, like, I remember vaguely when Oral Hershiser won the World Series, and I cannot believe it's been that long since they've won one.
Trust me, it's been that long. Trust me, it's been that long. It'd been 32 years. So they were able to erase those demons last night and do that. Yeah, I'm excited about it. We're not going to spend the whole morning talking about it. I'm not as excited because, I can tell you, coming up here in about 15 minutes, Todd Dodge, head coach of the Westlake Chaparrals, will join us. The Chaps get back to work this week, and they're playing Hayes, and we'll talk with Coach Dodge about getting ready for that matchup with the Hayes Rebels. Jeff will have his football notes coming up bottom of the hour. We will have our inconceivable moment later this hour. Our man CB sent me one on Twitter, and it's worth repeating, so we'll do that. In the 11 o'clock hour, just past the top of the hour, Dave Hunziker, play-by-play voice of the Oklahoma State Cowboys, will join us to break down the matchup from the Oklahoma State side between Texas and Oklahoma State. So we'll have that as well. So a lot of football on the program to discuss, no doubt about that. We will probably, I think, it is fair to start off with what happened, however, last night. I'm glad the crybabies were finally able to buy their World Series. That's okay. You can go with that. It's in an astronomically weak take when you look at their farm system and how they raised everybody up. And it was a trade for Mookie Betts. Yeah, they went ahead and signed him to that 12-year deal once they traded for him because the Red Sox were willing to trade. But just about everybody else on the roster either came through their farm system or were cast-offs from other teams, like Max Muncy, who was out of baseball, and they got him. Alex Wood, another guy who had been released. So I think they're scouting and farm services probably deserve a little credit on that, but that's okay.
I enjoy watching Alex Wood pitch against Atlanta because that's when I was a big fan of Wood initially.
Yeah. Came up with the Braves. Then he was a Dodger. Then got traded in the Yasiel Puig trade, went to Cincinnati. Then ended up getting released, hurt. Dodgers signed him again to a minor league deal, got him back up. Then he got hurt again. He missed a lot of the year, and they got him back, and he gave them some really key innings last night. So, anyway, so there's some of the notes about the guys who were key figures in turning around. Obviously, you have to, if you're a baseball fan, whether you want the Dodgers to win or not, that's cool. If you were a baseball fan, you had to feel good for Clayton Kershaw with everything he's been able to post in terms of his Hall of Fame numbers. It was the one thing that was hanging out there that folks continue to point to and said, well, the career's incomplete unless he wins World Series, which I don't know that that's entirely fair when you look at some of the great players. You're going to tell me Ernie Banks' career was incomplete because he never played in a postseason game? Oh, dude was a Hall of Famer, deserved to be in the Hall of Fame and never played in a postseason game, let alone win a title. But in any event, no matter how you feel about that, Kershaw now has his World Series championship to go with all of the other regular season numbers and things of that nature as well. So is that you had to feel? There's probably some vindication, if you will, for Dave Roberts, the Dodger manager. I also understand, this has been one of the great, there were three major themes that came out of last night's game. Number one, obviously, is that the Dodgers, finally got over the hump and won for the first time in 32 years. The second one was Kevin Cash's decision as manager of the Rays to remove Blake Snell there after he had been so strong, and he had been really strong, and that's where analytics is going to really come under the microscope for that sort of thing. In his post-game interview, when he was pressed about it again from Ken Rosenthal, he mentioned the fact that, you know, it was a decision he could live with, had to live with, you know, that sort of thing. The Rays bullpen had been dynamite all season long, no doubt about it. Had just been incredible all season long, and he was leaning on that. However, the point was made, and this is a fair point. I think Ken Rosenthal brought it up. Tom Verducci, I think, brought it up. It had been brought up by John Smoltz as well. You know, you're using an extrapolated sample size over the course of an entire season in a condensed amount of time with regard to pitcher effectiveness, and would they be effective in that sort of situation? And postseason managing quite often is by feel. Listen, that both hurt and helped the Dodgers in the World Series. Dave Roberts went by feel to go to Kenley Jansen out of the bullpen Saturday. It blew up in their face. It was a disaster with what happened there. But he went by feel with what he did Sunday night when he pulled Clayton Kershaw and the decision, the bull, with first for Dustin May, and then after that, the bullpen decisions that they made, Victor Gonzalez, and how they got it closed out with Blake Treinen. That rolled a seven. You know, that hit the jackpot. And then last night, after Gonsolin got bumped up early, again, and I think John Smoltz, who I think is just a tremendous analyst, said the movie made to bring Dylan Floro in when the Rays had another threat working after the run had crossed the plate to get out of the second inning, that was big, and then they just went bullpen after bullpen move after that. So there it was. So anyway, that's the excitement of that. So there's a lot of excitement, not only for Dodger fans, but baseball fans, all that sort of thing. I wanted to put this up there on the Specs text line today at 337-3776. This was a question that came up yesterday, and we didn't get it until the tail end of the show, so we couldn't use it in time. But I said I was going to hold on to it for today, and so here it is. Here's the question, and that is the question that the fan put up yesterday on the Specs text line was, if you could have one of your favorite teams, because if you're a sports fan, and a lot of you are listening to the program, you have like a favorite baseball team, a favorite NFL team, a favorite NBA team, maybe even a favorite NHL team, and along with your favorite college football or basketball teams, or your favorite, whatever, college baseball team, or whatever the sport might be, if you could have one favorite team win a championship, whether it's a world championship on the professional level, or if you had a world championship on the professional level, or a national championship on the collegiate level, and you get one championship out of that team, and then that team doesn't win another one for 20 years, which team would it be if you could do that? I just went through 32 years with my favorite baseball team. I'm at 21 years on my favorite NFL team. But and then I think I'm a decade for my favorite NBA team as well. So and as we know, the team that I want to win, obviously, in college football, the team that I broadcast, it's 14 years. So 15 years on the season. So if you could have, you get one, and you don't get another one for 20 years. Now, and you think about this, it's kind of like when you play the Snoop, when you play that, Survivor game every week in NFL Pick'em, you can only pick that one team to win that specific time. Then you can't pick them the rest of the year. So you have to be judicious in how you pick them. And the first time you lose, you're out of the game. So you want to pick a team to win, but you want to pick them at the right time. In other words, picking, say, Kansas City against the Jets, you don't want Kansas City. You don't want to pick Kansas City that week because you know they're going to beat the Jets. You want them in a more difficult game like with Baltimore or Pittsburgh or something like that, whereas the Jets, you could probably match them up against most of the rest of the NFL and on a given week say, I'll go with the other team that week. So you can only spend it once, and it's good for 20 years. You only get one title, but you get the one title. But then you go 20 years without getting another title. So you think about that for a moment, Snoop. Maybe it's Navarro College winning a JUCO football national title. I don't know. Like, for example, we've already...
Ooh, I have one, okay. But I'll save
all right,
it.
All right, save it. Dan says definitely the Cowboys. Understand that, given that it's been 25 years on them. Somebody that's Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox won 2 years ago. They won four since 2004, but that's okay. So he said, don't let the Astro haters get to you. Do you think David Price deserves a ring? He'll get a ring because he's part of the organization, even though he opted out. He'll get a ring, so I'm sure he'll get it. Somebody said San Jose Sharks. There's a great example because the Sharks hadn't won one, so there it is. Somebody who's a loyal San Jose Sharks fan. Somebody said the Raiders. There's another one because, as we know, it's been a while since the Raiders won a Super Bowl. As a lifelong New England fan who grew up there, 33 years old now, I'll never forget when Vinatieri's kick went in against the Rams. That hurts. At that point, we had never tasted anything close than the Packers rolling the Parcells Pats. Then seeing 04 was amazing. That's the feeling I'm talking about. That's the feeling I'm talking about. When you get that kind of feeling from your team, I had that feeling last night, certainly. But Blake says, my beloved Texas Rangers. Sure, because they've never won it, so that's why. Somebody else said, at this point, I guess I would say the Pats, because one more without Tommy Boy would be worth it. Iowa Hawkeyes in football, Miami Dolphins. One guy, and talk about that Survivor thing, like Kansas City of the Chargers when I got knocked out of a Survivor. Yeah, see, it can happen. So spend it wisely spend it wisely. Somebody else said Atlanta Braves. So there you go. Elio, there you go. Atlanta Braves. And they got close. You know, they were one win away from being there. Somebody said, I wouldn't choose one championship and then have no hope. I'd rather have hope every year and never win. Okay. And there you go. That's my point, is what, you know, are you willing to be happy with the one title knowing you only get it for a score, as the saying goes, for 20 years? Are you happy? Allstruck Construction says Texas in basketball. So you get the one, but it's the only one you get for 20 years. So that's why I would weigh it carefully in saying, you know, if you think that your favorite pro or college team has a chance in the next 20 years to win more than one title, then you don't pick them. Because if you pick them now, it's the only one you get for 20 years. So burn the hand. But if you think they've got a shot at winning at least one, if not more, in the next 20, but there's somebody else, like, for example, my alma mater is the University of North Texas. They're not winning a college football national championship. So many things would work against that being a group of five school, you know, that kind of thing, and trying to build the program. But that's an example of what I'm talking about. That's why I kind of put that to Jeff Howe when Jeff gets here. I ask him if maybe his alma mater, Texas State, falls into that category. Something that you just, you know, probably in the next 20 years they're not winning a national. Now, who knows? Maybe the landscape of all of that changes. But it's got to be a team that you think probably it stands a better than even chance of not winning a championship in the next 20 years. What team would that be? Somebody says Indiana Hoosiers. The Browns, okay, says Victor. Now, the Austin intern's saying this as he's laughing. Texas men swimming and diving. Yeah, you don't want to spend it on that because Eddie Reese's team stands a chance of winning multiple titles in the next 20 years. So that's an example of one you don't want to spend it on. But if you have one team, somebody said Bowie Bulldogs. There you go, Bowie Bulldogs. 6A state championship, you know, that would be that. Somebody else, and my pick would be the Longhorns this year with Sam. See, now that I'd love to see him get a championship. He said, Blake, having hope and not winning every year is the definition of being a Cowboys fan. Been one for life. So somebody else says, are the Longhorns there now? But here's the question. Again, if you can have a favorite team win a championship in any level of sport, but it's the only one they're going to get for 20 years. The only one. So my advice to you is this. Pick one that is one that you're pretty sure they're not going to win virtually at any time over 20 years. And then go with it on that. If you feel good, like your chance, say, you know, you're a Chiefs fan, or like somebody said, a Patriots fan, or even a Red Sox fan. You know, the Red Sox has shown the ability to flip the script pretty quickly. After winning the world title, what, in 13, I guess it was, and then they gutted the roster again back and then came back and won it again at 18. You know, that's one you can see them winning titles on down the line, even with the Mookie Betts trade factored in there. Before we take the break here, before Todd Dodge joins us, Jeff Howe is here, the pride of Northwest Williamson County and a proud graduate of Florence. Would it be the Florence Buffaloes winning a state championship for you? Jeffrey Howe?
Under the premise that you don't think they're going to win one ever again after that, then
20 years.
Yeah.
20 years.
Well, it's been since I think my senior year was the last time they had a winning record, and that's been 19.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been a while.
So given that, or Texas State winning a college football national championship?
No, for me it would be the Cowboys. And I'm going on 25 years with the Cowboys.
Yes, you are.
As it is. And when you know, it's going back to the text that somebody said a minute ago about Sam Ehlinger. It's all about windows, and you just pointed out with the Red Sox, right? Maximizing your window to win a championship. And I've watched the Cowboys, Craig. I watched Bill Parcells build a championship caliber roster, and then turn it over to Wade Phillips, and then 2007 happened. So that was your Jason Witten, Tony Romo, DeMarcus Ware window right there. You had another crack at it in 14, and we know what happened at Lambeau Field You had that great run Dak Prescott had as a rookie in 16 where Aaron Effing Rodgers, just something about him and the Cowboys in the fourth quarter. I don't know what it is, but that happened. So I've watched the Cowboys have a couple of windows, namely that 07 window, to cash in and win a championship. But no, for me, it would. I've seen the Mavericks win one. I've seen the Astros win one. I've been alive long enough to watch, and I've talked about it, you know, growing up in Northwest Williamson County, I didn't have a pro team, so Texas for the media market was
right.
My pro team growing up. I've watched Texas win a couple of baseball national championships, a football national championship, make a Final Four in basketball, so all that's fine and dandy, but man, it's been so long since I've seen the Cowboys at least make it to an NFC championship game. Like, okay. That's I would take that one of these years if you tell me, hey, they're at least going to make the NFC Championship game this year.
Okay.
I would actually be okay with that.
Okay. Maybe you can amend it enough to say, in the case of the Cowboys, make an NFC Championship and then you're out for a decade.
Yeah, I don't know if I would take that.
All right.
25 years is a long time, Craig. You know, 32 years is
a long
time.
It's a long time. And I remember that night in 1988 when they won. I was so excited and stood there in my living room as I posted on Facebook. In 1988, I'd been married 2 years. I had no kids. We had just moved into a house, my first home purchase in Irving. I was working in Dallas at KRLD, and I was so excited. And I remember thinking, I might even have said it out loud, I can die happy or whatever. I never have to do it. If they never win another one, I'm happy. Wrong. After a while, you won't let. No, don't ever say that.
No.
So, anyway, so there's that. All right.
But real quick, yeah. Greg, back to championship windows. I think that's kind of the frustration. And I'll get to some of this in our football notes segment, next segment. But that's kind of the frustration with Texas is, for Tom Herman, you had this window with Sam Ellinger as a senior to where you catch and go with a championship. College football playoff. This point, that's not going to happen. Can you still go in a Big 12 championship? If you're going to do that, you need it this weekend.
Start this week, no doubt about it. We'll get to that on down the road. Up next, we're going to visit with a man who is the coach of a current state champion, the defending state champions in 6A Division II. Our weekly conversation with Todd Dodge, head coach of the Westlake Chaparrals. When we continue with life,
there's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
This is Life the Tower here on the Horn. Craig Way and Jeff Howe with you. And courtesy of our friends at Cedar Park Overhead Door. Check them out online at cedarparkgaragedoors.com. It's time for a weekly conversation with the head coach of the Westlake Chaparrals, Todd Dodge, who's Todd, I appreciate the time. I know it was an unusual week, certainly last week. I'm curious from a coaching perspective how you and the staff worked through the postponement of the game with Bowie and keeping your guys dialed in and understanding that things like these have happened all across the state of Texas, and it could be an inevitability on any high school campus this season.
Yeah, it was, a strange week. We literally worked all weekend, our staff, Saturday and Sunday, so that Sunday evening about 6 o'clock, I get the call from Austin Public Health that they are strongly suggesting that we suspend practice for a week. And so the alternatives weren't really good, so we did. So we just obviously had to inform Bowie and the rest of the district. And that's why our District 26-6A built in two weeks of off weeks on the 13th of November and the 4th of December. Actually, our district's been hit with another one this week with Lake Travis and Del Valle. So they'll be playing that week also on that. So we basically took an off week, but we didn't do anything physically because we couldn't. So it was really strange. I felt like we were almost back in the middle of July when our kids got taken away from us in summer conditioning. We saw them on a Friday night after the San Marcos game, and then we didn't see them again until this Monday. in person. Now, we did a lot of Zoom meetings, did a lot of video, did a lot of breaking down ourselves, and then starting to get to work on the next opponent.
Did it help a little bit in terms of all the Zoom meetings you had to do, in the down week, given the fact that you had to do that over the summer with those guys, so they were used to the routine and understood what was there on the table?
Yeah, it absolutely was. It would have been really strange had, you know, it just all of a sudden this was the first time we'd ever had to shut down. So, I mean, the whole Zoom unit meeting, position meeting, team meeting is just a way of life for everybody in football these days.
And how would you describe how things have gone this week once you got the guys back and got them on the practice field on Monday?
Oh my gosh. We always practice Monday afternoon, 4:30 to about 7. And, golly, you talk about have some juice in practice. These guys were just, you know, could not wait to get back to practice. So it's really been a good week. I think that, you know, a real strength of this team is their combined love for the game of football and their ideas about not being entitled to anything. And I think this just reiterates what we went through last week on how fragile this whole situation is. And, you know, out of it, you know, we were ordered on Thursday, if we were going to get back to play this week, that we had to test our entire football program. I mean, we had a mandatory test that came down from Austin Public Health, and I say we came through it with flying colors, and so we're able to get back on the field and back in practice.
Good news indeed. Visiting with Todd Dodge, head coach of the Westlake Chaparrals here on Light the Tower, Craig Way and Jeff Howe.
Coach Dodge, you talk about getting back on the field, getting ready to face Hayes, and when you look, you know, specifically with their offense, what they were able to do against a team like Lake Travis, we know Coach Goad's run that slot T for a long time, but it's a slot T. They'll spread you out, and they've got some skill guys that can present some problems to you, do they not?
No, they definitely do have tremendous skill players, starting with their quarterback. But, I mean, they've got, like, five skill position players that are in that 6'2", 6'3", you know, 190 to 210-pound range. I mean, they're not only skilled, fast, but they're big. And so been very impressive. And I think this is what Les has been trying to get, you know, since he's been – at Hayes. I think that what he's done in the past is not only be a, you know, a ground and pound kind of team, but also a team that can strike quickly. And they have. And so it's going to be great. It's a great challenge for us coming up this Friday night.
Well, I was going to ask you about that deal. We've talked about this before, Todd, the discipline that it takes from a defense in dealing with, in this case, what Coach Goad has with his offense. And it's different than what you see on a lot of regular weeks, is it not? And so a lot of time has to be spent on that, time that somewhere down the road may matter again if you run into another team like that. And if not, then you just set it aside to go back to what you were doing. But you have a lot of time investment into how to defend this particular offense, correct?
Yes, you do. And it's kind of, you know, helped a little bit that this is the third year that we've played Hayes. That with them being in the slot T, I definitely think this is their best offense. So, but actually, a couple years ago in the district we were in, Del Valle was running a wing T. Then Anderson was running some slot T. And of course, Hayes, I mean, we had, I think that 2 years ago, I think we had 3 weeks in a row that we played Anderson, Del Valle, and Hayes. And, that's helped a little bit because, you know, you just don't see the offense, and it's really tough to defend, especially when you have some really skilled athletes to go along with it.
Coach, I know Cade Klubnik has continued to pick up offers over the last few weeks, and you look at his production on the field and the numbers are impressive, but what's your focus with him just in terms of what you want to see him improve on week to week?
Well, you know, continue. We're continuing to seek, you know, other, you know, receivers to step up within our scheme of things. We've got a couple of guys who have been very productive. But Cade is, you know, just he is, you know, borderline one of the more accurate guys that I've had. But the big thing is you can't ever be too accurate unless you're completing 100% of them. And so that's the deal on that. Always working on, you know, pocket presence. He is, you know, he's worked really hard on being a guy that's a distributor first. And he's improving every week in that way. And it's when you can run as well as he can, it's difficult sometimes to be patient. And he's doing a much better job of being patient in the pocket.
Final thing here, Todd. I would imagine that you mentioned how exciting all the juice and the energy your guys had just getting on the practice field on Monday of this week. How wound up do you think these guys are going to be on Friday night when you get ready to take on Hayes, just to get back on a field and play an actual game?
Well, actually, I can't wait. You know, selfishly, I'm ready to get back out and get back into the arena. You know, we all are competitors, but these kids, you know, I've told them all along, it's about you, you know. And, you know, after we did this, you know, this test that we had to do, and I think we may be the first team in the entire state of Texas that's had a mandatory, you know, have to test your entire team if you're going to get back on the field. We know we're healthy right now. The one thing is that we know we're healthy. But I tell you what, these kids are, when you talk to them about, hey, guys, this thing could get taken away from us at any time. Well, it hit home with us, and it did get taken away, and it was kind of scary, to be honest with you.
Mm. Glad to hear you're past that hurdle and getting ready for Hayes on Friday night. Todd, as always, I'm grateful for the time. I'm glad you guys are back to work, and best of luck on Friday night.
Thank you all so much for having me. I appreciate you.
You bet.
Thanks, Coach.
That's Todd Dodge, head coach of the Westlake Chaparrals. Like he said, and we heard Hank Carter yesterday say almost the same thing. Nothing is promised, especially with everything that's going on right now. In fact, you know, as we get into the football notes segment, we can kind of start off with an update from the Big Ten, right?
Yeah. Got our, as far as I know, our first Big Ten cancellation, Wisconsin at Nebraska this Saturday. Not happening due to COVID-19. We've had all kinds of conversations, Craig, about at the high school level here in Texas, mm-hmm. not just with the UIL, but the district executive committees. What if you don't get your games in by that district certification date, what's going to be a no contest, what's going to be a forfeit, et cetera. This one is going down as a no contest. And then it sounds like Paul Chryst didn't come out and say this, but it sounds like a lot of this is tied to the fact that I don't know if Wisconsin has a healthy quarterback. Yeah. Available for this game.
Can you imagine that being your position group? Like we talked about with Baylor, it was the offensive line, you know, when they had to push back the game with Oklahoma State. Your quarterback room.
Well, we know Graham Mertz, their outstanding yep. freshman quarterback, has tested positive. And due to Big Ten protocols, he's out for 21 days.
Right.
So, and then there's reports that maybe the backup test positive, mm-hmm. the third stringer test positive. So, yeah, Wisconsin's got the got some COVID issues
okay.
right now.
All right. As we roll into Longhorn football notes, again, our thanks to head coach Todd Dodge of Westlake, our weekly conversations with our high school coaches throughout the course of the week. Brought to you, as always, by our friends at Cedar Park Overhead Door. Check them out online at cedarparkgaragedoors.com, which also brings you Jeff's football notes.
Yeah, Craig, I want to bring this up for discussion. You know, our national staff at 24/7 Sports, we're at the halfway point of the college football season, even though, you know, Pac-12 hasn't joined the party yet. But those guys got together and did kind of a mid-season review type article looking at what was the best game of the season. And it's our national college football staff, Brad Crawford, Brendan Marcello, Josh Pate, Bud Elliott, Barton Simmons, and Chris Hummer. You know, game of the year, a few of those guys voted for that Texas-Oklahoma game for the Red River Showdown, a quadruple overtime, 53-45, even though it was a loss for Texas. A lot of those guys liked the entertainment value of that game. But, Craig, you go down to a category that you don't want to be in, which is biggest disappointment. And of our six national college football staff members, four of them said Texas has been the biggest disappointment of the college football season so far. And Trey Scott, who admits in the article, he said, given the UT Austin diploma that hangs on the wall, I'll take it from here. He said, I'm a bit surprised the Longhorns weren't the unanimous air quotes winner. considering many in this bunch picked them to make the playoff, including myself. And that, in defense of myself, that was before I knew the Pac-12 and the Big Ten were getting back into the party, which they certainly are not doing now after a 2-3 start. Tom Herman will be lucky to make it to the Big 12 title game, and he might need to do that to keep his job. There are plenty of stats I could pull out here and there, and many of them are ugly. The most painful stat, however, is the fact that this is a top 30 team nationally in both offensive and defensive yards per play, yet the product on the field looks like a team that should be 2-3 or worse. Thankfully, UTEP and Baylor were served up on a platter. And this goes back to something we talked about in the first segment when you talk about championship windows and your favorite team winning a championship. And
yes,
we mentioned this a little bit yesterday in regards to Sam Ellinger's struggles. And to me, that was kind of the one job above all else. If you look at the priority list for the Texas staff going into the offseason, even before COVID, post-COVID, whatever, how do you get the most out of this last year you've got with Sam Ellinger? Craig, and people can talk about Sam Ellinger and view his career however they want. I'll view it like this. Do you realize how tough it is to, in college football, find a proven commodity at the quarterback position, a known commodity at the quarterback position? It's really, really hard. Case in point, this program pretty much throughout the decade until Sam Ellinger got that job and came into his own. So you had this, you have this one opportunity. Now, could Sam come back? I don't know. Those conversations are to be had because eligibility is frozen this year. But that was the one job you had. You had to figure out how you get the most out of Sam Ellinger this year. And for the reasons we talked about yesterday, Craig, you know, the wide receiver group being what it is, and you really haven't found the right rotation that works there. You've got three running backs right now, but it feels like you haven't identified one. You know, you've got an emerging tight end at Jared Wiley, who I think everybody would like to see involved more in the offensive line. If you talk about disappointing aspects of this team, for me, it's been the offensive line. I expected much more out of this offensive line than what you've gotten. And when you talk about going into this game, Craig, with Oklahoma State, you're going to need Sam Ellinger to create some explosive plays. To do that, you're going to need your wide receivers to get off press coverage. And we know with Rodarius Williams and Colby Harvell-Peel, they're going to play a lot of press coverage on the outside. Mike Yersich, then the problem is you've got to scheme up some deep shots, whether it's your double moves, your switch routes, whatever. To do that, you need time for those things to develop. And given how shaky your offensive line has been, you're really in between a rock and a hard place if you're Mike Yersich trying to figure this thing out. And just how good is this Oklahoma State defense, Craig? That takes me to this. And we'll talk plenty of Oklahoma State football, with Dave Hunziker coming up in the next hour. But I just looked at just statistics for conference games, Craig, because, look, well, let's just throw out your Sun Belt game or your CUSA game, whatever, your FCS game. Let's just throw that in and look at just in conference play. Oklahoma State, scoring defense, they're number one, giving up 12 points per game. Now, granted, they haven't exactly faced a murderer's row. They've already gotten Kansas and West Virginia out of the way. Did play a pretty good Iowa State team, but here are the numbers regardless. Scoring defense, number one, 12 points per game allowed. Total defense, number two in both yards per game allowed, 303, and yards per play allowed, 4.5. Run defense, they're number four, 127 yards per game they're giving up. Yards per carry allowed, and this goes back to what Trey Scott mentioned in terms of some of the numbers for Texas don't look that bad. Giving up 3.5 yards per rushing attempt, that's tied with fifth in the league with Texas. Texas giving up 3.5 yards per carry. We talked about the Texas defense, not the totality of their run defense that's been bad. It's just the 1, 2, 3 explosive plays they're giving up per game are really muddying the good work that they're doing. Pass defense, they're number two. Both in yards per game allowed, 176. Opponent completion percentage allowed, 57.7. Yards per pass attempt, 5.7. They're number one. That's a really, really good number for yards per pass attempt allowed. Sacks, they're number two with 15, but you extrapolate that per game at 3.75 per game. They're number one in the conference. Craig, I had to double-check this. In conference play, Oklahoma State on third down defensively, 19.3% opponent conversion rate.
Wow.
Yeah. That is salty, salty third down defense. Red zone defense. We talk about it all the time, Craig. In the Big 12, we talk about high scoring offenses. What are the two areas where you're going to be bad and everything else? But what are two areas, if you're really good, you can win a lot of games?
Get off the field on third down and keep them from scoring touchdowns in the red zone.
Oklahoma State's number one in the conference in conference play in third down defense, and they're number one in the conference in conference play in red zone defense. 66.7% conversion rate allowed in the red zone. They've only given up 6 total scores in conference play, 4 touchdowns. Both of those are also number one in the conference. So, going back to what we said a minute ago about Sam Ellinger and this Texas offense and all the issues they have, you're going to have to play not necessarily your best game. You're definitely going to have to play your cleanest game in all aspects of that offense if you're going to come away with a win on Saturday.
No doubt about that. All right, coming up next, we'll have our inconceivable moment when we continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn.
I don't think it means what you think it means.
Oh, well, could it mean dinosaurs? Fried fish? Or the COVID?
Can I make one correction, Craig, from last segment before we get started? I'm
sure.
You know, I will admit when I'm wrong or I've made a mistake. Those numbers I gave you for Oklahoma State, those are overall this season, not just limited to conference play. So
okay.
That's extrapolated out over the whole season, which...
Well, it just adds one game, Tulsa.
Adds a Tulsa game, but look at Tulsa.
I know.
They're not that bad.
I think the numbers are still impressive regardless. Yeah. Do either of you guys do Trader Joe's?
I do, yes.
Okay. What about you, Snoop? Are you a Trader Joe's guy, or is that a little...
It scares me because it seems too fancy.
Too fancy.
No, man.
Would it seem any fancier to you if I told you that... Well, let me ask you this. Have you bought any fish from Trader Joe's lately?
No.
Okay. Over 4,400 pounds of Trader Joe's fish has been recalled. 350 cases. Now, this is... Well, I should have known better than even ask that question of you, Jeff.
Nice piece of fish.
It's a gluten-free battered halibut. You haven't bought a gluten-free item in your life, have you?
I don't think I've ever. I have eaten gluten-free.
Yeah.
I honestly don't think I've ever eaten halibut.
Okay. Halibut's good.
I don't think I have.
Properly prepared and everything. This, by the way, and I love the food company that ships to Trader Joe's, called Orca Bay Foods, based in Seattle. They're recalling some 350 cases of Trader Joe's brand gluten-free battered halibut because, not because of a poison thing, but because the fish were packaged without listing milk or wheat as allergens. That's right. There have been no illnesses reported.
So the fish, there's technically nothing wrong with the fish.
Other than the fact that they didn't list that there's milk and wheat in it.
Well, I hope you donate that fish. No, seriously, there's plenty of people that could use a good meal, a nice piece of fish.
It says, according to Seattle-based Orca Bay in an announcement, people who have an allergy or severe sensitivity to wheat and milk run the risk of serious or life-threatening allergic reaction if they consume this product. Now, the product was sold in Trader Joe's stores in the following states: Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, New Hampshire, New York, Ohio, Rhode Island, Tennessee, Vermont, and Wisconsin. Not Texas. So they have an affected code there on the box that talk about it as well. So there it is. There were none of the cases apparently reached Texas.
I'll tell you this. Trader Joe's has a great... what I like about them is they do the trail mixes, but they'll do them in like little individual packets.
That's right.
They have a breakfast trail mix
really?
That is freaking awesome. It's like got like little granola balls and like yogurt drops in there. It's really, really good.
Because your day's not complete without a granola ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, there you go. Speaking of food from the ocean, I wondered about this, the story yesterday. There was a story yesterday, and it started off with the fact that people were looking at what they thought was an iceberg. No, it was a fossil, a prehistoric fossil in Antarctica, which could have been the biggest flying bird ever.
Wow.
It was a dinosaur bird.
Well, if it's mistaken for an iceberg, then we got to be talking about a pretty big fossil, right?
Well, it was a small iceberg, but still, paleontologists have published a study. These birds were identified as Pelagornithids. It's a group of predators. That might be my next fantasy football team name, the Pelagornithids. It's a group of predators that roamed the Earth's southern oceans for at least 60 million years. They were known as bony-toothed birds because of their sharp teeth and long beaks, which helped them grab fish and squid from the ocean. The birds were huge. They had wingspans reaching up to 21 feet. And the specific individuals that the fossils belonged to may have been the biggest of them all.
Dang.
That's pretty scary when you look at that, what that looks like.
Look at that, Snoop. That's like a, looks like a, from here it looks like a dolphin with wings.
Yeah.
Yeah, a killer seagull.
Something like that. So, yeah, so it could have been the biggest flying bird ever as a result of that. Speaking of flying, there's a Harvard study. How much attention do you pay to things like study from, you know, Journal of American Medicine or Harvard University, you know, those type of learned studies?
Yeah, my eyebrow gets raised anytime one of the Ivy League schools puts something out because I assume they
were on the forefront of the COVID.
I hope we have the best of the best at those institutions doing the research so we don't have to.
Well, according to a Harvard University study released yesterday, computer models used to review airflow in airliner cabins says the specialized onboard ventilation systems filter out about 99% of airborne viruses. And the study says,